Hey, Sarah. Hopefully Sarah's there. This is Jerry Daniels. It's our podcast this week. Every week, Sarah and I usually do a podcast somewhere Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday during the week. And this week, we're going to talk about live code.
So we are. Good morning, Jerry.
Good morning. Well, quite a miracle we get connected, given our time zones and our technology limitations and all that good stuff, but we did it.
We made it, yes. So here we are, and we're ready to talk about live code.
Yes.
But before we get stuck into live code, I think we should talk a bit about where live code came from. And that, of course, has to go back to the original, which is HyperCard.
Yes. Yeah.
Were both HyperCard people back in the day.
Oh, yes, we were. Yes, yes, yes. I loved it. Oh. So what was your first experience with HyperCard, Sarah?
Okay, well, I was one of these snooty programmers. I could program in C and C++, and to me, HyperCard looked like a toy.
Mm-hmm.
And then I forget what it was, but I think my boss, who is also my brother-in-law, got a book about HyperCard when he was in the States one day at time. And he came back and he said, "You got to learn this." So I sat down with the book and I was converted. And I think it was Danny Goodman's book on HyperCard. And I worked my way through it and I realized that while you can use it just like a toy, and there are an awful lot of incredibly awful stacks out there,
yes,
you can dive right in and you could do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so then, given that it's Mac only, it had a lot of these add-ons, what we would call extensions nowadays, which it really tied into deep into the Mac system. So I had HyperCard stacks talking to electronic equipment, doing process control, and absolutely no problem with that. I had them doing various printing jobs. I had them doing office management. I had them doing mailing lists. I had HyperCard stacks for everything. So what about you?
I came at this a little bit differently than you did. I learned computer science in college, but that was in the 1960s, and so that meant punch cards, and it was very crude. So I didn't have a whole lot of fun with that, but, you know, muddled my way through some of it, and I had difficulty. The only people who could teach it were people who were not native English speakers, and at least the school I went to. And, you know, I had a terrible time with it. And I was just a country boy from Missouri, and you know, I couldn't understand their English. So I struggled with it and eventually just kept going with my science courses and didn't really pursue as much computer science as I probably would have today. But in the process of doing that, I got reinterested in it again in the 70s when the Apple II came out. And at that time, I had a mini computer built by Xerox. And so it was very expensive, though, expensive to run, expensive to maintain. So, yeah, I got an Apple II, followed along with that, did all the stuff with BASIC, got an Apple III, and that was kind of interesting, and did a few things with that, got a couple database programs and learned to use those. Then came the Mac. And you remember the days the Mac came out, there really was not a whole lot you could use in order to write your code. And so I got Forth. If you remember Forth.
Yeah, we'd been used to computers like you with your Apple II and stuff, and I was on the Commodore stream at that time with the VIC-20 and the Commodore 64, and they all came with BASIC as part of the operating system. You didn't even have to load anything. You could just run BASIC direct from the command prompt.
Right.
And so when the Mac came out, all of a sudden there was this enormous barrier to entry to program it, and I didn't. I didn't program for it. I stuck to my Commodore Amiga, and I had a PC, and that's what I programmed on at the time.
Well, I did some stuff in Forth, And it was the first programming language to be supported on the Mac itself. Then, of course, Pascal. And, you know, Lightspeed came out with a couple great environments, Lightspeed C. And, you know, I kept in Code Warrior, kept going along that line. And then it was about that time I got a package in the mail from my friend Chuck Farnham. And it was a four floppy, 3.5-inch, right? And I, at that time, I think I had a pretty decent Mac. I'd upgraded it myself to 1024 with my own little soldering kit and what have you. Ooh. Put a hyperdrive in it, right? Remember those?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I was all set. I had that, and I got these four disks, and it said Wildcard on them. I called up Chuck. I said, "Yeah." I said, "Chuck, what is this?" He said, "Well, this guy, Bill Atkinson, put his hard drive in for repair at this shop where I got a buddy, and he called me up and said, you should see this stuff." And he showed it to Chuck, and Chuck said, "Well, just put it all in these floppies." And Chuck made copies and sent them to me. And it was Bill Atkinson's hard drive, all the stuff having to do with Wildcard, which became HyperCard because he couldn't use the name. And so I got an early start on it, and I think I'd Beta 3, and I spent 48 straight hours inside of that thing. I loved it so much, I couldn't sleep, couldn't eat, I just couldn't keep my hands off of it. A couple days later, I got stumped on a couple things, and I had some contacts at Apple, and I finally called some people and asked some questions, and I got a hold of the Wildcard team, and they said, "Oh, great, you got it, super, what version are you running?" And they didn't care at all that it was pirated or anything else. They were just happy to help. And sure enough, you know, I wrote some stacks immediately with it and just loved the heck out of it. And, you know, it was the first programming language I really fell in love with. The other ones, I worked in, did what I had to do, and it was more of a chore. But this was not a chore. This was like breathing rarefied air.
Okay, but then Apple really lost the plot with HyperCard. They could never quite work out what it was good for, because it was good for so many things. And they tried farming it off to the file maker people and then bringing it back in-house. And eventually it got steved. So there we were looking around for an alternative. So what did you consider at that stage?
Well, I was working at a telecom up in Dallas, and I needed to get my team organized, and it took too long to write custom software, of course, even using the good web tools that we had at our disposal. And I thought, boy, I wish I had HyperCard. And I thought to myself, I wonder what else is available. And I saw SuperCard, and then I saw MetaCard. So, yeah, I just immediately plunked down my $1,000 and got MetaCard and was off to the races and wrote project management software for my team. I was a director, IT director at the time. And then just started fiddling around with it a lot. And then not shortly thereafter, it Kevin and the gang started Revolution and started taking over MetaCard. And that became LiveCode as we know it. And it's cross-platform.
Yeah, that's cross-platform, that's something we're going to debate later on in this talk, because I think cross-platform is a strength and a weakness.
I agree.
I had much the same process as you. I tried out SuperCard. It didn't click for me.
Nope.
There were various single-person startups that were looking at various things. There was Python Card, I think. There was Surf. But MetaCard, soon to become Revolution, soon to become LiveCode, was really the only one that worked for me at the time.
Yes, and I should add that in the middle of my foray into HyperCard, before it got abandoned by Apple, I really fell in love with Compilot. Greg Pittman's Compilot is being published by Heiser Software. Ray Heiser and Brian Molyneux were the champions of that. And yeah, I really drank that Kool-Aid hard. And so, yeah, that was my ability to get really into a lower level of software development within HyperCard, you could write using HyperTalk and compile it into X commands or X functions, or extensions as we call them now. And that freed up a whole, I got so much work, professional projects and products, in that era. It was kind of amazing. So I mention that because you and I are going to talk about what's going on today with live code, and that's one of the reasons I'm interested in what they're doing today, because I think those old days are coming back.
Well, it would seem so with the new direction live code has taken, although mm-hmm. as we know from watching them, live code takes a new direction every now and then and completely abandons the direction that it was going in the previous year.
Yes, true that. I don't think this is one of those, and we'll get to that, right?
We'll get to that. Okay, so live code now is in version 8.
Yes.
Version 7 was not a good version. All the version 7s were not good. Version 6 had been very good.
Very.
Now, version 8, they seem to have got the train back on the tracks, don't you think?
I think, they've got their mojo back. They have so much more going on inside of 8 than they did in 6, and they've nearly got the performance for 8 up to the grade that it was in 6. And I thought 6 was maybe their best release, that series, their best release they ever had.
Okay, well, take us through some of the things in LiveCode 8 that you think are really good improvements.
Well, even before I do that, I'd like to mention a couple things. You know, there's a thing, if you were a HyperCard developer and you came up through all this, there's a tendency to ignore a lot of the new stuff because you already have your code base written. You've already done this stuff. You know, you've got maybe megabytes of it. I think of people like my buddy Richard Gaskin, and he's got libraries and libraries and libraries. So, you know, I was a little bit that way myself. And so I tended to ignore some of the stuff that was in 5 and 6. Because I had work to do and I had deadlines and, you know, just didn't notice it. But then you and I kind of took a detour from live code the last few years and did a lot of work in iOS and in Xcode. I came back in the last 6 months or so because I had some clients who wanted some work done in live code. So I thought, well, what the heck, I'll go back to this. And I did. And you know how when you are away from a language for a while, you go back to the dictionary, look stuff up. Well, the dictionary gotten so much more vast, and I started noticing stuff that I never noticed before. And it was stuff that was in 5.5 and 6.3 and stuff like that. And a lot of it centered around what you could do in text fields. And the text field has really become unbelievable. I almost view it as a canvas. You can do amazing things with a text field. So I had kind of a reawakening going back into 8, finding all the stuff that I had missed that had gone in previous versions. So I would exhort people who are using a live code and doing so in the way I probably did professionally and maybe not noticing some of this stuff to go back and take a good look. And in 8, one of the reasons you can do this is the dictionary is vastly improved. It is so much better for navigation and a number of other things. It still needs updating, of course, but, you know, given how broad the dictionary is, it's quite a task. And, you know, I have a lot of sympathy for the folks who try and keep up to date with that. But they have a good team on it, and 8 has a whole lot of good stuff. I would say that the big thing with 8 is they are supporting widgets. And even at a layer slightly below widgets, there's this thing called Live Code Builder. And it's the beginning of a more structured language, a language that is well-typed, data-typed. So, you know, its whole goal is to allow you to hook directly into the engine, the Live Code engine, to extend the language. And so that's the idea of Live Code Builder. And with Live Code Builder, you can either create widgets, which are things you see, or libraries, which are bodies of code, which you need to either tie into something else like some of the APIs in iOS or conceivably Android and, you know, do all that good stuff. So this builder thing is a big deal, and it does remind me a lot of the kind of discipline I had to use back when I was writing X commands using Compilot. So there's kind of a fondness in my heart for it that way. but it still has a ways to go. It's still settling down, you know, and it's going to be that way for a little while longer. But I'm kind of excited about that. That's the big thing for me in 8. And plus, they ship with some widgets already built, and some of them are quite nice. The one for SVGs is quite incredible, and it's really good. There's others too, headers, footers, navigation bars, stuff like that. And they scale really nicely. They're really quite beautiful. They perform well. Now all these things have little bugs in them and stuff like that, and you can run up against that. Plus, the other thing in 8 is they're adding a tremendous amount of third-party stuff. The Merge External stuff by Monty. What's his last name, sir? He's a countryman of yours, I believe,
Goulding.
Isn't he?
Yes.
Yeah.
He's from South Australia. Monty Goulding.
Yeah, his stuff is all in there, which is extensive. They've just also acquired another massive library that handles, you know, everything there is with HTTP and sockets and tons of other stuff. So if
yes,
you want to go a little
up. Yes, they've got a TS networking library. I have actually, like you, I have recently come back to using some live code because I have a client that needs it.
Yeah.
And the new TSNet library is so much better. You can now make calls asynchronously where before they would just block the whole system.
Yes, true. Yeah, which is huge. And I think in general, one of the people I always watch is Trevor DeVore. He's an old friend of mine. He's done some incredible work in live code. He's developed Screen Steps, which is a great app. If people haven't seen it, I suggest you look it up. But Trevor does great work, and I really respect his judgment. And I asked him before he was going over to the conference, the Live Code conference a few months ago, he said, well, what do you think about Echo Builder? And he says, I'm going to the conference, you know, and I'm going to find out a whole bunch of stuff. I'll get back to you when I get back. And he got back, and the big takeaway I had from it was, he says, they're really doing this right. And you have to know Trevor to kind of appreciate what that means. And Trevor's been known to go on a death march too, so I was hoping he wouldn't say something like, well, it's really cool, but I'm not sure how I can get it through this or that. But he had a real optimism about the future, and I'm sure he spent a lot of time with Waddingham and Kevin and the rest of the team, which is now extensive. And so he's very convinced that they're going in the right direction with it, that this is going to become a very powerful tool if you want it to be. If you don't want it to be, you can use it much in the same way that you and I used Hypercode when we started.
Okay. Well, a couple of years ago, LiveCode was open sourced. And
yeah.
Now there is an open source version you can get, and there are also a couple of licenses you can buy, what they call an indie license, and I think the other one's a commercial license. So what are the main distinctions? You know, what is the open source version of LiveCode going to be dropped, or is it going to sort of start losing features on the paid version, or what's the deal?
Whether it's going to be losing features in the future, I'm not sure. But at present, it's not too bad. You don't get encryption. That means a couple levels. Number one, you can't encrypt your stacks. So if you're selling a commercial product and you don't want people to source code, then yeah, you've got to up and get the commercial license, one flavor or another. And I think it's indie and business. I'm not positive. I think those are the two flavors. And yeah, they cost money, and it's a yearly renewal, and that kind of good. So what you get with the indie license is you can encrypt stacks, but also you can use the encryption tools, as I understand it. And I don't think you can in the open source one. I have to double check that, but I'm pretty sure that's the case. In the business license, you get a few other extras, like the ability to really work some magic with PDFs. Reading the text and searching and stuff like that and extracting data. So, yeah, and there's some other things you get with the business license, more support, various other things. The indie license, if you make over $1 million USD in yearly revenues for product, then you need to up to a business license, which has such limitations?
Well, I'd love to have that problem.
Wouldn't we all? Wouldn't we all? Yeah, and so, you know, my interest in this is multifold. One thing is I am interested in allowing more people, particularly young people, to experience what I experienced when I ran at a HyperCard. I want them to feel sick. I want them to go a couple days without eating and sleeping. I want them to be that excited about technology. You know, they do that. But I feel that what we have today in Live Code is it's almost like a operating system. It's meant to be a meta operating system, meaning cross-platform. And I want to get your thoughts on this in a moment. But that is a very exciting notion. And this is almost impossible to keep up with. A programming team could never, a private programming team could never keep up with Android, iOS, macOS, and Windows, every little release, every little feature. They could never keep up fast enough to make this relevant, and therefore, there's going to be a lot of limitations to what you can do in any given OS. That having been said, they have a campaign for all of us to start writing widgets that bridge some of these gaps. And so they hope to make for what they don't have native in the engine, the Live Code engine, with widgets. And they're hoping and trying to seduce us into creating those things. And I think it's a worthy thing, and it's very exciting, and it takes a tremendous amount of effort on their part to make that happen. And if anyone's up to the task, it's Kevin Miller. He is the most determined person I've ever met. And he is hell-bent on seeing that done. So that's kind of what they want to do. And my goal in doing this is done project work for people for 30 years, and I'm 67 years old, and it would be great for me to just be able to rely on projects and not projects, because I could go a little more at my own, have a little more fun, have a little more freedom, etc. And so I'm looking at creating some interesting projects, products, using Live Code to reawaken that magic that I felt in other people. So I invested interest in exploring all this. And, of course, I have had a couple clients in the last 6 months who worked on it, and that's how I got back. How about you, Sarah?
Well, from your point of view, anybody who's used Live Code for any length of time will have come across your tools, particularly your alternative script editors, which were amazing and, I have to say, enormously better than the included script editors. So I'm sure we all eagerly await any widgets that you can provide, because I know they'd be well crafted and well thought out.
Thank you.
From my point of view...
Go on.
Okay. Well, from my point of view, I have moved away from Live Code. When the option arose to develop apps for the iPhone, Live Code had a problem. They couldn't get their iOS, they couldn't get Apple approval to include their iOS stuff at that stage. Now, of course, you can use Live Code for iOS and Android as well as the desktop platforms. But at the time, you couldn't. So I jumped ship at that point and taught myself Objective-C, which I have to say was a struggle, quite a steep learning curve. But Objective-C got better and better as the years went on. And then suddenly we got Swift. And now you said that HyperCard was the programming language that you most enjoyed writing in. Well, for me, I love writing Swift. And so I restrict my personal development using my Trosware application development is only for Mac and iOS and Apple Watch. So I don't use Live Code except when contracted to. And part of the reason for that is the cross-platform nature. I don't tend to require cross-platform work, but you always, with Live Code, you're always paying the price for the fact that it is cross-platform. You never get native look and feel.
Right. Yeah, I can't
And you don't
can't
really get
that.
The native performance either.
Oh, no, that's that's the big one. And you know, that's starting to change with the older, but you know, before, I think that has a little ways to go. And even at its height of performance, Lightroad did get to the point where I thought it was, you know, a lot better than any form of JavaScript put against it. So, you know, I'll say that. And that was good. But there's nothing quite like what you can do in a pre-compiled environment. It's going to be hard to beat that. But that is where they're headed with the stuff. If you need performance, if you have something in a repeat loop, if you want to respond to events quickly and all that good stuff, then the builder environment is your way to go, because the data typing, the close to the engine. The engine has been completely and re-optimized, all kinds of good stuff. And so it, and not only that, but it does a heck of a lot more than it used to do. So that said, I'm hopeful about the future, and some of these things might be overcome, but the fact remains, if you start using Builder, there is a learning curve there as well, and it's not completely frictionless, and it's like falling off a log. I would say it's more difficult than using Compilot was. I don't know if you messed
well,
with
I would
that
say
very
that
much.
I never used Compilot, but LiveCode is, of course, vastly more difficult to get into than HyperCard was. HyperCard had its various levels, and if you were in level one, you could really just click around. But then you moved up the level, and you could add buttons that did things with visual effects. You could add fields that displayed things. And so without any scripting at all, you could make a fully interactive stack. And then you worked your way through until finally you were, you know, using Compilot to make your own extensions, or using existing extensions to, you know, in my case, to talk to over the serial port to a device reading, you know, reading pH values and turning valves on and off. And HyperCard was had a really well structured learning curve. So it was super easy to get into. LiveCode is not nearly as easy to get into. It has so much, and it has so many different ways of doing the same thing. And a lot of it, the expert LiveCode people know all the workarounds. They know, oh, you can't do this, it doesn't work properly, you have to do it this way. And that's sort of anecdotal. And without that experience, it's really hard to get past those stumbling blocks.
Well, I think you'll agree, it's a pretty good environment to consult in.
Yes, it is. And there is a community, and you know, there's forums and there's mailing lists and there's Stack Overflow people.
Yep.
So there is help out there, but it's just not. Don't expect it to be easy to get into.
Well, I would add one thing to it also, is that by its nature, the HyperCard product, as you said, it had tiers, you know, not the kind that come with eyes, but the right kind. You know, you could go up a level, up a level, up a level, and it was natural. It was built into the product. No such thing exists like that. I'm sure they're working on making that happen, and maybe it's more of it there than I know of. It's very possible. But I would tend to agree with you. When you hit it head on, you know, there isn't that first experience you used to have with HyperCard. And people on the mailing list and in the forum talk about this all the time. So it's not an unknown thing, and I'm not the first person to say that, neither are you, of course. But that is the challenge and the opportunity and various other things. That's why the language is so broad, you know, LiveCode, and the things you can do in it are so broad, and the ways you can do them are so varied, that you can make it do almost anything you want to do if you have the patience to find out the right way. And once you find out, you slap your forehead, of course. But until you know something, you don't know.
Yes. Well, I think that's, HyperCard was really good for people who didn't want to basically learn how to program or didn't want to learn very much how to program. And LiveCode is a full programming environment, and it's going to take just as much effort to learn as if you booted up Xcode and started to learn Swift, or if you booted up Visual Studio and started to learn C Sharp.
Right. Yeah, and, you know, look, I have some nephews who have young kids, and of course my daughter has them. And so, you know, when they get of age and they want to start coding and what have you, you know, I would probably push them today. I would push them to the playground, as would you, I believe.
Mm.
Get an iPad, sit down, and some fun with Swift, and then that will provide this kind of stepping effect you and I were just talking about that HyperCard used to supply. Right?
Yes, it does. Yeah.
So now, if LiveCode is going to stay in the game, then they've got to do the same thing, and they've got to get a lot of people on board who are a lot younger than I am, and which in most communities, almost everyone in the LiveCode community, I am not by any means the oldest person there writing code. So they need blood. I think they're getting it. I see a lot of people on their team, both volunteer and paid, that are definitely millennials and young people and what have you. And that is a really good sign, and I like that. That's great. And, you know, I want to think I can do to help. But, you know, that said, you know, the practicality of mortgage and raising kids and what have you, and the practicality of having a career as a software developer, I think, you know, Swift is really the future, anything that implies. Difficult to create the profitable Android software. I think a lot of people have learned this. It's too fractured, too fragmented. Maybe that'll change with Pixel phone. Who knows? But right now, it's not that way. So if you want to be a commercial software developer, I definitely say Swift. You know, it's the way to go. Now, most of the people, a lot of the people in the LiveCode community today are making their money projects, not products. They're not products. They're enterprise projects usually, or small business or medium-sized business projects. So for them, they have to have a long legacy kind of product to create. You know, it has to run on Windows, who knows what, hopefully not 95, you know, some pretty old to Windows, right? And, you know, who still runs his stuff on a simulator, his HyperCard, you know, and he stuck on Tiger, I believe, on the Mac. So, you know, there's a lot of that going on too. Yeah, and there's going on than you think. So, yeah, are they doing the right thing for their constituency today? I think probably they are. They're walking a thin line here. They're trying to take us all they're trying to take their community without losing too many of them along the way. They have great people helping them. You know, Jackie, Land of Gay, she does a great job, you know, at the conferences, teaching people and stuff like that. So does Devin out of BU. He does some great stuff with Jackie and training these people and getting people up to speed. They have webinars. They have all kinds of good stuff. But it's just, it's quite a monumental task. The problem is that the product itself doesn't have those tiers we were talking about. If it did, if it spoon-fed you and babied you a little bit along the way, then that might make a difference. That might make a big difference. But as it is today, it doesn't exist. So, and I can see your point. You know, you want to do commercial software. You also want to do you know, some enterprise software and software for your own company that you work in. So what are you left with?
Well, yeah, as a Mac and iOS only business, the choice is fairly easy.
Now, work, do you develop any iOS or do you do Android or use LiPo?
Both. And we have a lot of legacy stuff that came across pretty much from HyperCard that's in live code. But any new stuff is in Swift.
Gotcha. Cool.
Okay, Jerry, we've gone over our time, but thanks for sharing your thoughts with live code. And we certainly look forward to seeing what widgets or extensions that you create, because you're really good at that. So until next week.
Thank you very much. Yes, next week, looking forward to it. Thank you for your time, Sarah. Oh, and where can people find
you? Oh, yes, Trosware, at Trosware at Twitter, or tros.net on the web.
I'm at Jerry Daniels on Twitter. I'm also on Facebook and LinkedIn, and, of course, Zcast, where we're recording, same handle, Jerry Daniels. And you're at Trosware, same place. Thank you, Sarah.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.